WTNS, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk.
This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good cold morning, Rutherford County. It looks like we're going to be in the deep freeze for a while. And we have Mr. Larry Williams on, one of the more interesting people that you'll ever get to know. And part of his show is brought to you by At Home Care. And when you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means that Home Care is hands-on, involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care provides top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, 713-4639. Online at homecaretennessee.com. That's 713-4639. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm fine. How are you?
I really appreciate you getting out of bed and coming over here on this good cold morning.
It is cold out there.
Yeah, but it kind of wakens you up. I was having a hard time getting my eyes open this morning, and then I go outside and they open fairly quickly.
It will wake you up this morning.
Yeah. You come from a long-time Rutherford County family. And I have known you most of the time when you were the FAA and investigating all kinds of things that were going on in air traffic. But I didn't realize that your family was so strong over in the Christiana area. And we all know where Miller Store is.
That's right.
Now.
When I was a kid, I used to go down there and Stanley Miller would cut off a slice of bologna and fry up a bologna sandwich for me back in the 50s.
That's a famous name over in Christiana.
It is.
I mean,
yeah.
You think of Christiana, you can't think of Christiana without Stanley Miller.
Yeah.
But you were telling me about your family having a store right there in that area.
Well, my grandparents live next door to Stanley Miller, and when my father was about 19 or 20, he was actually in the grocery business working for his uncle who had a small chain of grocery stores and a wholesale grocery business. Mm-hmm. And he decided to start his own store. So he and his father built a little store there. It's a rock building. His father was a carpenter and a farmer. And I think maybe the city of Christiana couldn't support two stores very long. So he got out of the store business and went back to work for his uncle in the grocery business, traveling around in all of his different stores, and mostly Middle Tennessee and Southern Alabama.
Most people don't realize that Christiana was a really thriving, almost like a metropolis. It was really a whistle top stop, I guess, right there for the train.
Had a bank and a store, a couple of stores, a bank, mm-hmm. And had a pencil factory there, and whenever that pencil factory burned down, that's when they moved it to Shelbyville, and Christiana kind of dried up after that.
Probably wasn't anything left but the lead, right?
That's right. Probably still there.
Did you live any around that area?
No, I never lived there. I always lived in town.
You got to stay sometimes with your grandparents.
Oh yeah,
right?
Every weekend we were out there. Yeah.
See that's a dream of mine, is living next to the tracks. I have always been drawn to railroads. I don't know why. You have people that complain about hearing the railroads go, the trains go by when they're close and you're trying to sleep. It's the opposite for me. It just calms me down.
I get used to it, like living next to an airport, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But you went the other way. You went through school here, and then for some reason you're attracted to being in the air. What brought that on?
I wanted to do that when I was in high school, but my parents said it was too dangerous and they wouldn't let me.
Ooh.
Yeah. And
that was probably mama more than daddy, right?
Yeah. mm-hmm. because yeah, he used to say, well, your mama said, you know?
Yeah, mama said it.
And but they said, well, when you get 18, we'll talk about it. So mm-hmm. I was actually on a senior high school trip in Daytona, and I almost forgotten about learning to fly. I was going to go to college and maybe do something like a lot of parents want. I was looking at being a doctor, having to go to Vanderbilt for about 10 or 15 years. And mm-hmm. But anyway.
You never regretted that, I presume.
No, I did not. we kept noticing these airplanes fly up and down Daytona Beach, towing a banner all day long. Mm-hmm. And a buddy of mine were laying there the last day we were there. And I said, you know, that would be the greatest job in the world, is to tow banners up and down Daytona. And he said, you know, I've been thinking about taking flying lessons. So we came back here first week of June 1964 and started taking flying lessons.
So it was a small craft that really attracted you more than anything at that time.
I thought about going with airlines, but a lot of the airline pilot friends I had, they really didn't like their job. I liked the money, but the job was, you know, they were always gone, and it mm-hmm. was kind of, it's kind of boring, you know.
Yeah, you see, I can't see it that way, because yeah. you're going to a different city, a lot of them. They go into Europe and all across the world, basically, and you're seeing different people all the time. It almost sounds like a dream job to me.
Well, you know, when I was learning to fly, as soon as I got my commercial pilot license, then I got my flight instructor certificate, and that was part of the deal. As soon as you got that, Miller Lanier, who ran the flight school, we called him Chief, he mm-hmm. said, I'll put you to work as a flight instructor and pay you $3 an hour. And this is 1964, and that was about three times minimum wage. So.
Now, how many hours did you have to put in to become a flight instructor?
240 hours.
Wow.
So that was April of 65 when I got my flight instructor rating.
And now, since you've got all this behind you and all these miles ahead of you, do you feel like, for some reason, 240 hours does not seem like a lot of hours in the air?
You're right. I see a lot of these young flight instructors and young airline pilots, and but then I think back when I was that age, I didn't have much more time either. But with 250 hours, I was a flight instructor, and I guess I soloed my first student a couple of months later. And there was a guy who used to come to the airport about once every 6 weeks or so. He would fly in early in the morning. He would sit there all day, wait for his passenger. He was a corporate pilot. Mm-hmm. Of course, back then, everybody had coats and ties. And one day I asked him, I said, let me get this straight. All you do is fly this airplane. He was from South Alabama somewhere. Mm-hmm. I said, you fly somewhere and you sit there all day and then you fly back home. Yeah. I said, now you don't have to work on the airplane. You're not a mechanic. Don't have to. You hire somebody to keep it up and clean it. And he said, yeah. I said, so when you're not flying, you don't have to do anything else? He said, no, this is all I do. I said, man, what a great job. You get to fly, you get to go places, you get to stay in motels and eat at restaurants. But
he doesn't get to fly with banners behind him on the beach.
And he said, yeah, it's a great job. But it probably, I did that for a while, and it does get kind of boring, you know.
You're not the type to have a boring job. You have to have some type of task in front of you that's interesting and maybe complicated to a lot of other people, but not yourself.
Yeah, it's once you do it for a while, it comes pretty natural. But I think I learned to, when I would fly somewhere and sit all day, you just learn to not get excited and not get bored, you know, always find something to do. So I did that for a while, and I flew for a couple of small airlines. And after I was here for a while, I went to Nashville, flew for Nashville Flying Service and Big Brother Aircraft, and then another FBO fixed base operator down in South Georgia. They wanted a chief pilot, chief flight instructor, and they were paying more, so I went down there for a while. Flew for a couple of small commuter airlines, and all these companies I'm talking about, they're all out of business now. Mm-hmm. So I decided I need to get a non-profit organization job so I wouldn't have to show a profit. And the first one was with Auburn University. I went down there and worked for them in their aviation department. Mm-hmm. And I'd been trying to get on with FAA for 7 or 8 years, and I got a call one morning. They offered me a position, so I took it.
I can see you doing that. You and Steve Lane are a lot of, come on, don't be laughing at me, are a lot alike in one way. If somebody asked you what type of plane you're flying, you'll be the one that'll say what type it was, where it was made, how many boats it's got in it, and all those other things that go with it. So I can see you going to the FAA. And you're just that, you're a good pilot. You really are, from what I have understood. I have never flown with you because you don't have 6,000 hours in the air. But maybe, I don't know, maybe you do.
Hey, I got 12,000.
Oh, I'll fly with you then. Okay. That's
a magic number. 6,000 your minimum, 6,000?
I'm not flying with Steve Lane, I can tell you that. Not in a helicopter. I've flown in those things. Actually, I've jumped out of them, and I'd rather jump out of them than fly in them.
Oh, and you won't fly with Steve in the...
No, no.
Until he gets 6,000 hours?
How many hours does he have? When he changes types of aircraft, maybe I'll fly with him.
Okay.
Now, you were in the FAA. You started working there. Before we get into that, with all your experience that you've had in the air and dealing with aircraft of all types of natures, it was just brought up recently about extending the airport here in Murfreesboro. And I went to a meeting not long ago, and I got to talk to a lot of professionals of all levels in the airline industry, even Mr. Bomar, who architects most of the small airports in the state of Tennessee, if not all of them. I mean, he's very bright. And one of the things we started talking about was the length of the airway, because the airport was not maybe conducive to safe flying unless they extended the runway further than what it was now. And I don't think that's one of the things I was reading when they were talking about extending it and all the complaints that were on it. It didn't seem to mesh very well, because when I think of really expert flying, I'm thinking of aircraft carriers and things like that that have the postage stamp runways. And here we have people that are flying in that are, some of them are training to be pilots. What is your expert opinion on that? And we don't want to get into the politics of it. And I used to live underneath where they would fly over my house all the time.
Right,
and
yeah.
I loved it. I mean, yeah. I loved to watch them. I guess it shows you how crazy I am. I'm fascinated with that.
When you bought that house, did you know the airport was there?
I did.
I thought so.
I did. and to this day, I kind of miss the planes coming over.
Well, the city built that airport back in 1952. They moved it from the College Airport. Matter of fact, there's still a street over there called Airport Avenue that dead ends into the college where the runway was. And in 1970, they bought the McKnight Farm, and that was the reason to buy the McKnight Farm was for recreation and expansion of the airport. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, it's been 40 years before they got around to it, but the Airport Commission had been working on this probably about 3 or 4 years, and they have to come up with what's called an airport layout plan that the FAA requires, and they have to keep that updated. Mm-hmm. And the latest airport layout plan had an extension of the runway to 5,000 feet, which they would not have to buy any more property because they already had it. They could actually have gone a little farther north, made it a little longer, but 5,000 feet seems to be a good runway length. If you look around the state and around the nation, there's a lot of airports 5,000 feet long. That provides for safety for almost any general aviation airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the opponents thought that bigger airplanes would start landing there, and all the consultants and all the studies show that was not true. Noise, they said it might increase by 1%, and the increase in traffic was going to be about 1%.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, a jet meant a lot more noise. Now, a lot of the jets are quieter than the props that land there and take off there now. 757 is quieter on takeoff than a Cessna 182, which is a little four-place airplane. And jets have been landing there since at least 1968, because I landed there in 1968 in a jet, and it was legal, it was safe, but a longer runway would have made it a lot more safe.
It takes a lot of the things that might happen out of the equation, doesn't it? When
right.
you have that much more to
right.
go, you're not as...
See, small airplanes, basically airplanes that weigh less than 12,500 pounds, mm-hmm. are called non-transport category airplanes. And all they have to do to be legal is to take off and not run off the end of the runway when they take off. A twin-engine airplane that weighs less than 12,500 pounds only has to have a climb chart. And that climb on one engine can be negative. In other words, they don't even have to maintain altitude if they lose an engine. So when you get into what's called transport category airplanes and jets, there are some exceptions. Mm-hmm. They have to be able to do what's called start a takeoff, mm-hmm. lose an engine, and stop on the runway.
Now tell everybody what lose an engine means.
An engine quits.
Okay.
This is a twin engine like a jet.
Right.
And we do that in training all the time. It's mm-hmm. called an aborted takeoff. And they have to figure that up. They have charts to figure that up. And then they have to figure out what's called a first segment climb. They have to be able to take off, mm-hmm. lose an engine. It's what's called V1, which is the go, no-go speed, mm-hmm. and continue their takeoff. Because once they've lost that engine and they've gone just another foot, they can't stop on the runway. So they have to continue the takeoff and be over the end of the runway at 35 feet. And all transport category airplanes are certified to do that. So when you see an airplane transport category, which are most jets and jets, at an airport taking off, if they lose an engine, they'll be able to climb out. And they have to keep on climbing out to 400 feet before they do anything, and then they turn back around, land at the nearest airport, which is usually the one that they just took off from.
When you're training, or in the process of being trained to be a pilot, I presume that during the training, you have to take in every possible situation that could occur with you in the airplane.
Yes, and you do that in training and in check rides. I've done thousands of check rides, and you do that.
Now, how many hours will they turn loose a new pilot who can actually go out in solo?
Actually, solo, back when I first started flying, about 7 or 8 hours. Now the average solo is about 14 or 15 hours.
That still doesn't sound like a lot of time in the air to
no,
me.
No, it doesn't, does it? Well, 7 hours didn't sound like much back then either.
I know when we had a little accident, it hasn't been that long ago over at the airport, they had you on television, and one of the things that you said, matter-of-factly, that, pilot error. You know, sometimes experience is a factor in, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say 50, 60, 70% of all accidents are pilot error, and even more so human error, which is either someone on the ground did something wrong, mechanic did something wrong, air traffic, they've been known to run two together. So
we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Larry Williams.
Right now, one in three drivers is cruising around in a state of skepticism about just how much value their car insurance company is delivering. If you're one of them, I'm State Farm Agent Celeste Middleton, and I can help you get to a better state because I'll talk with you, listen to you, and help you put together a policy that has you written all over it, all backed by 24/7 customer support. Feeling less skeptical? Give me a call at 895-2700.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm Agent Celeste Middleton. Give me a call at 895-2700.
Here's Frank LePetri, pastor of Holly Grove Baptist Church.
Sometimes when I want to start a fire, the wind puts it out. But when I try to keep a fire burning, the wind keeps it going. So in the first situation, I label the wind as bad because it defeats my plans. In others, I label it good because it helps me accomplish what I want to get done. That's how we judge many things. But God is the one who determines what is good or bad. And he does so not by how it affects our plans, but by whether or not it accomplishes his. This is Frank LePetri, the pastor of the Holly Grove Baptist Church. To accomplish God's good purpose, the Bible says we are to respect all people, love other believers, fear God, and honor those who rule over us. These kind of actions may fan a spark of belief in those who observe our responses to bad circumstances, and most of all, bring praise to God.
Be sure to visit our website, hollygrovebaptist.com.
Holly Grove Baptist Church, reaching out to offer hope.
Tennessee Radio Network News, I'm Kristen Thoburn. Crews are continuing to search for a father and two children who were missing after a canoe capsized on the Conasaugo Creek in Polk County. Polk County Emergency Management Agency Director Stephen Lofty says the Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency will supply an underwater sonar scanner to aid those efforts. He says the search will continue until the three are found. Officials have not released the names of those missing. Three other children made it safely to a creek bank Wednesday after the canoe capsized. All six people belong to one family from Delano, a Mennonite religious community. The city of Bartlett is conducting a mini census to try to get an accurate count of people annexed at the end of last year. They say it's only for five areas most recently brought into the city. City officials say they're trying to get the right portion of state shared revenue distributed on a per person basis. The nationwide gun debate is inciting Tennessee rallies.
At least 1,000 people gathered Saturday across from the Capitol building to show support for gun rights. Guns Across America rallies were held in state capitals nationwide days after the president unveiled gun control proposals.
TRN's Dan Idom.
We're here with Dr. Rishi Saxena, the only certified physician in heart CT in this area, talking about the 64-slice CT scan.
Other tests are invasive and they are not as accurate, particularly the treadmill stress test. Sometimes you may have a negative test, you may still have blockages.
Before heart catheterization or stress test, call 896-4800.
This is the earliest test where you could find information without taking too much risk.
Call 896-4800. It could be the 1 minute that saves your life.
Calling all runners and walkers. Grab your running shoes and join the Avenue Murfreesboro for the third annual Run United 5K Run and Walk on May 18th at 7 a.m. This year's event will feature a 5K run on a certified course, kids fun run, refreshments, and a kids zone. To register, visit active.com, and for questions, call 615-893-7303. Early registration ends May 1st. After May 1st, participants will not receive a t-shirt. All proceeds from the race benefit the United Way of Rutherford and Cannon Counties.
Memphis police have identified the man fatally shot by police officers Thursday night as 24-year-old Stephen Askew. They say officers were investigating a noise complaint when they found Askew slumped over the wheel of his car at Windsor Place Apartments. Police say the officer shot him when he pointed a gun at them. Memphis police say 10 officers have been shot in the line of duty in just the past 18 months. There have been three suspects shot by officers in the past month, precipitated by someone pointing a gun at them. Efforts to land the assembly of another Volkswagen model in Tennessee have been kicked into high gear following the German automaker's unveiling of its cross blue SUV prototype at the North American International Auto Show in Detroit last week. The automaker's current plant in Chattanooga could easily be expanded. Kristen Thoburn, Tennessee Radio Network News.
Don't wait. Getting affordable state minimum coverage from Safe Auto is so easy you barely have to lift a finger. The benefits are so obvious. Safe Auto keeps you legal and saves you money. Call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO today. Drive safe. Spend less. Safe Auto.
Don't make the 1-800 mistake when it comes to your peace of mind and your auto insurance. As your local auto owner's agent, we'll take time to sit down with you face-to-face and discuss your insurance needs. I'm Doran Claiborne with Claiborne & Taylor Insurance. Come by our office at 319 West McKnight Drive or give us a call at 893-5064. So don't make the 1-800 mistake when it comes to your insurance. Give us a call. We're your local auto owner's agent.
You can depend on Claiborne & Taylor.
WeatherEye.
Mostly sunny skies developing in our forecast today with an afternoon high temperature in the lower 40s. And expect partly cloudy conditions tonight with lows near 17 degrees. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sam Benisti. Right now it's 30 degrees.
We want to say congratulations to our WGNS birthday cake winner, Jacob Smitty, receiving the birthday cake from Junior's Foodland. And our WGNS good neighbor of the day is Elaine Hill Hanks. over at the Rutherford County Family Y. Her first full week in that new position. Congratulations to Elaine Hill Hanks, our WGNS Good Neighbor of the Day, receiving flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts.
To bag the deer of a lifetime, you have to be prepared. That's why you need to shop Murfreesboro Outdoors.
This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors. We get camouflage clothes, shotguns, shells.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street.
There is an underground civilization underneath of the North American continent.
It's Coast to Coast AM. Overnight, every night. On WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Larry Williams. This part of his show is brought to you by Charlie Pitts Hairstyling on Las Casas Pike. They provide quality haircuts, styling for men, women, and children, and great music. Call 895-3997 for Charlie Pitts Hairstyling. It's not just a haircut. It's an experience at Charlie Pitts Hairstyling. You need to get him up and teach him how to fly, Larry. He would be very interesting up in the air. Oh, me. All right. Now, we've been talking about the Murfreesboro Airport and things like that. And I think that most people agree that... I know a lot of people do not like the noise, but it's not like being in Nashville where you have the 747s and all those things coming are extremely noisy.
And constantly.
You know.
And they have three runways, and they're landing on every runway, usually every couple of minutes. So,
unless I'm mistaken, when I was over, when I lived on Eventide, the traffic wasn't that much. I mean, you would see them out every once in a while, but when you see them flying around out in the county and they're doing all kinds of little loops and everything,
yeah,
is that the guys that are trying to get more hours or those that are in the training sessions?
They're in training session, and they're different types of maneuvers you do. One's called you fly around, it's a rectangular course, and you fly around a field and stay the same distance from that fence row all the way around the field. And you do that by turning into away from the wind, because of course when the wind comes, it's going to blow you over. So, and that's a maneuver that you do when you learn to fly, so you can fly by looking out and also looking in the airplane. And then some other ones, they do S-turns across the road where you bank the airplane more or less due to the crosswind. Mm-hmm. And then you go up a little higher and do stalls and other kind of maneuvers.
What is it about pilots that they all seem to have more confidence than anybody else? When you talk to them, it's almost like you're talking math. This is the way it is. 2 and 2 makes 4 and all that. Everything adds up when you're a pilot.
I don't know, but I read a study somewhere where most pilots are overachievers, and there's like 10 times the number of Eagle Scouts that are pilots than there are Eagle Scouts. And
were you an Eagle Scout?
No. Were you?
No.
Okay.
I couldn't even get my first badge. I don't know what it was.
Me neither. I don't know.
but you know, when Hoot Gibson on and some of the other pilots that have been on, I'm going to have Guy Rogers on tomorrow. It's absolutely fascinating when I've had some of the people that have actually have gone to the Top Gun schools, that are just extremely talented. It just blows my mind at the attitude of those people, because everything fits in a puzzle just right.
That's right. It's, if you've ever been around an engineer, they're the same way. Everything is just has to work, usually mathematically with the engineer.
Well, the toughest part that I've seen is actually reconstructing after an accident has happened, because I've seen it a number of times here, and I'm totally fascinated by it, how they can take all of the parts that are strewn over a half a mile area or whatever, and they're able to place it together and actually come up with the proper reason why that individual went down.
That's true. Usually. Sometimes they don't know what happened.
Now, how long does it take you to go through an accident reconstruction school?
The school?
Yeah, or however you are able to get the experience to be able to do that.
The first school they sent us to is 2 weeks, and then you go back for another two-week course, and then there's specialized courses that are a week or two at a time. One is rotorcraft, and then they have about every 3 or 4 years we would have a recurrent course, which was usually about a week, and that would teach us new designs and new materials with the composite material and stuff like that, and new ways of investigating accidents. I mean, when I first started, very few airplanes had cockpit voice recorders or flight data recorders, and now most of the larger airplanes have them. And there were a lot less radios and avionics in the airplanes than there are now. And you get most of your expertise by experience, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, going to the accident and trying to find out what happened.
Could you build an airplane from scratch?
Could I? No.
Of course, we've got a number of people that have done that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it would take so long, and I can't weld very well, so there you go.
But you know how the parts fit in. You know where everything is supposed to go.
Yeah.
I have seen a number of them that... I don't know why Murfreesboro or Rutherford County seemed to be a place that planes would go down quite often there at one time.
At one time, yeah.
I have seen, and it's been a while, I guess, but I've seen them go down. Now, when you're listening to the voice of the pilot who is talking to someone on the other side, have you ever heard anyone who seems to be totally stressed out and seem to be losing it? Because I don't think I've ever heard that. They seem to be almost matter of fact, and I guess that's part of the training, because they're trying to be so precise as to what's happening with them.
Yeah, usually they're pretty calm, except maybe some inexperienced pilots. I've heard one where the guy got into a cloud, and he was a VFR, visual flight rule pilot, so he didn't know how to fly via instruments, and he was trying to, he was talking to air traffic, and he got into a spin, and his voice got real high and real, he couldn't even understand what he was saying until it stopped. But most of them are pretty calm and collected.
I think they know how much that means to their safety, doesn't it? As long as they can relate exactly what's going on at the time, they seem. But to be when you're just voice, I mean, sight oriented, is that the first step?
That's the first step. In recent years, the FAA has mandated more instrument training, even if you're not going to be an instrument pilot. So just in case you get into instrument weather conditions, even something like over, like when John Kennedy Jr. went in, he was over the water and it was hazy, and apparently he didn't have any horizon he could look at. But he was a licensed private pilot, but he wasn't instrument trained, and they theorized that he didn't go on his instruments like he should have, and he got into a spiral and spiraled into the water.
He had quite a few hours in there.
Yeah,
he
did. But it was one of those things where we teach, if you get into a cloud or you get into fog or something, just go on the instruments and admit that you are in bad weather and call air traffic and get a vector to the nearest airport.
You know, they came out with some study, I can't remember, it was a couple of years ago, and this was for commercial pilots that were flying long distances, and they have a lot of instrument control there in their cockpit.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of that takes care of what they do. Does that sometimes take away your alertness, or
yes,
do you get kind of complacent there?
Those long trips are boring. Some of those trips, 10, 12, 14-hour flights, they carry at least one extra pilot, sometimes two extra, and they take turns sleeping. They have sleeping quarters, bunk beds, and they program everything before they take off, and basically the pilot takes off and pushes a button, and it's autopilot all the way down to even auto-landing, auto-reverse, auto-brake.
To me, that sounds scary. I know it's probably maybe even safer, but still.
They've shown that it's the autopilot can fly better than the pilot usually. And I've been on airplanes where they did land, auto land. The reversers came out automatically and it stopped. Mm-hmm. And then he kicked off the autopilot and taxied off the runway.
Do you think that it's taken a lick as far as air travel in the last probably 10, 15 years, where it's harder and harder for them to keep up and make a profit? What in the world is feeding that or causing that? Because most of the time I've flown, the planes have been full, I don't know, and the price wasn't that small. So
The planes are all full now, and most of the airlines are either going broke or are bankrupt. Some of the bankrupt airlines buy other bankrupt airlines, you know. Delta bought Northwest. They were both bankrupt when they did that. What causes that? I tell people, I could tell them how to make money. They need to charge more for the tickets. That's just the way it is. Of course, no one wants to pay more for a ticket, but competition has done that. If you have an airline that has almost exclusive flights, like from Nashville to Atlanta, the only way to go is Delta.
Yeah.
And a walk-up ticket is over $400. But if Southwest ever starts doing that, the price will go down because Southwest will be $100.
But they seem to be doing okay. So
they're making money. They've only had one quarter where they didn't make a profit.
That's wild. We've got a caller on the line, so we got to put her ears on. Caller, welcome aboard with Larry Williams.
Well, Larry, I'm listening to you. You're a very intelligent man, but I'm going to liven your show up just a little bit. I go down to Louisiana quite a bit. My wife is from Monroe, and I go down there and play golf in the wintertime sometime, and I have two brother-in-laws, and they wanted to get a job. Everybody was out of work down there, so I went down to the paper mill down in Louisiana. I got a lot of paper mills down there. He went down there and said, I'd like to have a job with you folks. He said, what do you do? He said, I'm a pilot. He said, well, we need a pilot real bad. We'll start you at $125,000 a year, but you got to do a lot of flying, work about 7 days a week. He said, I will do it. So he went home and told his brother, I got a job at the paper mill. They're going to start me next week at $125,000 a year. He said, my God, I'll go down and get me a job. He went down. He says, my brother just got a job down here, and I want him to come to work with you, too. He said, what do you do? He said, I saw his wood. He says, well, it starts at $17,000 a year, 7 days a week. He said, you pay my brother $125,000 a year. So, yeah, but he's a pilot. I know it. I saw it. He piloted. So I'm going to hang up and listen. Okay. Thank you.
Thank God.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Now, we were talking about how Southwest and some of the other airlines seem to make it and some don't. And you know, in the 50s and 60s, the airlines were riding high back then. They really were.
Well, that's when they were under the old Civil Aeronautics Board, mm-hmm. where they had to get permission to go. They had to get permission for every flight, every route, every airport, even airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
But when they did that, the CAB would guarantee them a profit. So if they didn't make a profit, you got a check from the government.
Wow.
And there's nothing wrong with getting a check from the government.
Why is the government so involved even now with the airline industry?
Well, they don't regulate where they go, or what kind of airplanes they fly. They mm-hmm. can go anywhere they want to as long as they got gates or whatever. But that was brought along back in the late 70s when they just deregulated the airlines. And that was one reason that the prices went down right mm-hmm. after that. And there were a lot of airlines that wanted to start, but the CAB would not give them what's called a CCN, Certificate of Public Need and Necessity. They just wouldn't hand them out unless they were inside one state, like Trans Texas had an airline, mm-hmm. and there were some up in Alaska that stayed in that state. If they went interstate, they had to get permission from the CAB. And in 78, they did away with that. So they could go anywhere and fly anything as long as they wanted to.
Everybody wants competition, it seems like. Of course, the people that are actually passengers on the planes, of course, they love the competition. But does it, at some point, does it affect the safety of the aircraft? Because you've got all these special plans going on. And I tell you what it reminds me of. It reminds me when they had the gas wars years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And it would go down from $1 a gallon to 17 cents. And nobody was making any money at the time. And it all just right. seems you can't keep going on forever like that. You eventually just break everything.
Yeah, the first thing most airlines do when they cut back on anything is training. Or hiring new hires, mm-hmm. and maybe even maintenance. And that's where the government has to come in and watch them and regulate them.
Well, you have to pay for what you get. Everybody knows that.
That's right.
And then I remember when the air traffic controllers were on strike.
I do too, yeah.
And then the pilots. And it was a strange time. And if I remember, I think Reagan was president.
Reagan
during that.
Fired 13,000 controllers.
Yeah. That doesn't seem like a very good idea to me. I know that they're trying to cut costs in somewhere, but you have to draw a line.
Yeah.
And well, those are the people that the pilots depend on more than anybody.
Well, they shut down the air traffic control system for a while. I mean, they still had controllers that weren't strikers, and then they had supervisors. Mm-hmm. And they brought in military controllers, but he gave them 48 hours to go back to work, and some of them did, but most of them didn't, so he fired them all. And I was living in Oklahoma City then, working at the FAA Academy, and the air traffic division started running 24 hours a day training new controllers. Now, a lot of those controllers are having to retire right now, so they're going to start hiring again, they say, pretty heavily. Because they have to retire on their 56th birthday.
Now, when they're air traffic controller, I've always heard, is one of the more stressful jobs you can have anywhere, because they're having to keep up with the flights of all the aircrafts, make sure that they're not in someone else's way, and they're protecting all the people, all the pilots that are on board.
It's pretty demanding some of the time. Some of the time it's pretty boring, you know, late at night and when nothing's going on, but they stay pretty busy. The 8 hours goes by real fast. Now, they only work in like 2 hour shifts and then they get a break. And if it gets too many airplanes, they'll divide up the sector or they'll just hold the airplanes. Have you ever been on the ground, taxi out to the runway, and they taxi over to the corner and shut the engines down? It's called a ground hold.
Yes, I have.
Well, there's a place in Washington, flow control, when they decide, back in the old days, you would just fly somewhere, and if it was too busy, you would just sit up and hold for an hour, and now they hold you on the ground.
Have you ever had them hold you on the ground when you looked out and there were icicles hanging from the wings?
No.
I was in Chicago one time and they did that.
Yeah.
And I was hoping they were going to keep us on the ground, to tell you the truth. I think we were flying into South Dakota at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. That was an interesting
trip.
Well,
sometimes that does happen. They have to go back and get de-iced again because there's only so many minutes that they can go from the time they get de-iced until the time they take off. I've been on the ground when that's happened before. So folks, we've got to go back and get de-iced.
Do you think we'll get into another time where the price of the tickets will level off to probably what they need to be? Because you just can't drive the good airlines out of business simply because you're trying. How is it that Southwest is able to perform as well as they do? And I'm talking about price-wise.
Well, they fill the seats up.
Mm-hmm.
They go places some other airlines don't go. Like they'll land in an airport they started out at Love Field.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Love Field had closed for almost all airlines, and they moved out to the new airport, DFW. Well, they got a little niche there. And when they first started, they just flew inside of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one of their reasons. And now they go places where they know that they either don't have much competition or another airline can't compete with them are very well. But I mean, they go into LaGuardia now and places like that. But they fill the seats. They don't have any amenities like the other airlines. Of course, most of them don't have them much anymore either. It's all one class. It's no first class or coach class.
Oh, that's gone? Oh, wow.
Well, they don't have first class.
Oh, wow.
You didn't
well,
know
I
that.
Never flew first class anyway, so how would I know?
They've never had first class. Everybody's the same class. they don't have seating. You know, just sit wherever there's an open seat, and that cuts down on money.
Everybody wants to know, where is the safest place on a plane if it goes down? I've always heard it's in the tail area.
It depends.
It depends on how you hit, right?
That's right. They say one study says it's in the tail, and then some other studies say you can't really tell.
Hmm.
But up front might be, well, it depends. It all depends. You just take your chance.
So me trying to get a back seat just really didn't matter anyway,
no, it
didn't
matter.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Larry Williams.
Hi, I'm Pastor Mike Norris of Franklin Road Baptist Church. So, what are you looking for in a church? I believe the church is a critical part of life for anyone who wants to grow their personal walk with the Lord Jesus Christ. The church is a place where we can open God's Word together and gain insight into how He wants us to live our lives and how He wants us to minister to those around us. It's where we can find biblical direction that will help us meet the challenges we face in today's life. It also serves as a place where we can draw strength and encouragement from other believers. But most importantly, it is a place where people can find God's purpose and plan for their lives. Here at Franklin Road Baptist Church, we want to help with your relationship with the Lord Jesus.
Visit Franklin Road Baptist Church on the internet at frbc.com. Franklin Road Baptist Church, down the street from Cason Lane on Highway 96, which is also known as Franklin Road in Murfreesboro.
Everyone loves Stones River Manor.
I love the people that works here and the people that lives here and all of the convenience that we have.
Stones River Manor, behind Rite Aid, at the intersection of Haines and Memorial.
I have lived here to be 5 years, and I've loved every minute of it.
Stones River Manor, it's home.
Registration for the second annual Special Kids Race presented by MMC is now open. With a sold-out first-year event, mark your calendar for Saturday, March 23rd, 2013, and choose from one of three distances, the 1 mile fun run, the 5K, or the 15K. Registration is limited to 3,000 participants, so don't miss out on one of Murfreesboro's biggest races. With your help, Special Kids can reach even more children with special needs. Register today at specialkidsrace.org and run for the kids.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
Welcome back with Larry Williams, and this part of the show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on the Ridgely Road. Now, if there were some prospective pilots out there and they're wanting to go through school over here at MTSU and take all the training, I guess you can take training, from almost anybody over there now. Yeah. Is that a difficult process for them to go through that?
No. Anybody can do it. Most anybody.
I couldn't. I was flying one day. I think I've told this before. Do you remember Curtis Collins?
Yeah.
Was over at the Sword of the Lord. And he was a pilot, pretty good pilot from what I can understand. And he had a few health problems. And you remember, Curtis was 250, 300 pounds. And we were flying one day, and he wanted to take me up, so we did, and we flew all around. And after we'd been up in the air about 25, 30 minutes, the wind started picking up. And then I had an idea that came into my head that absolutely terrified me. What would happen if Curtis were to have a health problem situation come up, and I was up there with him? what would that mean for me?
Well, you'd have to get on the radio and yell for help. Maybe someone would talk you down.
Is that possible? Because we've seen that many a time in movies.
So pull back, it goes up, but don't pull back too much because it'll go up and stall out.
Yeah. So you do that gradually?
Yeah. And when they've done that before, they've taken them out and let them kind of get a feel of what happens when they pull back and push forward and turn and hit the rudders and pull the power back.
Now, is that a difficult thing to coordinate the steering part or whatever you call it? And then the rudders that are at your feet.
It takes some practice when you first start.
Because that's almost like patting the top of your head and rubbing your belly at the same time.
Yeah.
So could you actually do that? It's happened before, but say if you had somebody like me that's only been in a cockpit a couple of times. I was fortunate enough to be in a cockpit one time with the major airlines and really enjoyed that, being up there with the pilots. But could you talk me into doing that?
Yeah. You want to try?
Today.
As long as I'm on the ground and you're up, I'm not going to.
I knew that wasn't going to happen. You're not that crazy. Did you ever fly with Steve?
Yeah.
In the helicopter?
Yeah.
Does he do well?
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Yeah. I was really shocked when he told me he's going to buy a helicopter. I thought when he's going to start flying, it's going to be fixed wing. I could not.
Well, he took some fixed wing lessons and he just didn't like it. He wanted a helicopter, so.
Is it easier?
No, helicopter.
I thought it'd be a whole lot more difficult.
Yeah, you can't let go of a helicopter. You got to, it's all the time. You're doing this, and this.
It goes. It doesn't go exactly straight down if it's not working right. Does
not exactly
it?
It straight
does
down.
It kind of zigzags, doesn't it? Well, Larry, it's been a great show.
I have
really enjoyed having you on today. Is anybody you want to say hi or bye to before we take off?
No, I'm good. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for coming on, and you have to come back on again. We'll get into some more things next time.
All right.
See you, Larry.
Thanks.